Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm your host, Parker Fleming, recording this on Monday, October 17th. The week regular season basketball is finally kicking off as the Memphis Grizzlies will be hosting the New York Knicks at 6:30 p.m. Central Time, which also going to be on ESPN. So first time ever, the Grizzlies are having their season opener on national TV. So that's really some cool stuff there. And to just preview this wild season on the way, we got a great guest, but before I introduce him, let me tell you how you can keep in touch with the blog and with the podcast. So Grizzly Bear Blues is a blog under SB Nation covering the Memphis Grizzlies. You can find it on the web at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SB and Grizzlies. And you can follow the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network, where you can find every single episode of GBB Live, the Next Gen Podcast, the Starting Five podcast, the Core Four podcast, and soon, starting on Wednesday, Grizzly Bear Bets, a betting podcast for every single game day. You will not want to miss out. It's wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, however you get it, the Grizzly Bear Blues Podcast Network will be there. Once again, I'm your host, Parker Fleming, and with me, I got a writer for the WNBA, Dime Up Rocks. He also is a podcaster for Indy Cornrows, the SB Nation blog for the Indiana Pacers. Also has a podcast with Tag the Roll. He also does daily ding stuff with The Athletic. Probably the most versatile basketball writer on Twitter, Mark Schindler. Mark, how's it going this afternoon, man?
I'm good, Parker. I appreciate the intro, man. I'm glad to connect again finally with the season starting back up. But I'm good, man. I can't complain. How's everything on your end?
You know, we're about to get some basketball, some actual basketball. I already kind of went crazy a little bit over preseason. I came out with a 2,000-word column on preseason basketball, but you know what? I'm just ready for the real deal to be here. And we got a lot to talk about because, you know, everybody's dropping their season previews, their predictions, their awards predictions, their standings predictions. And really with the Memphis Grizzlies, it's kind of all over the place just because of the small shakeup they did. Traded away DeAnthony Melton for Danny Green, who won't be available until February, in a first-round pick that turned into David Roddy. And they let Kyle Anderson walk as well, relying on the internal development of guys like Santi Aldama and the draft picks of David Roddy and Jake LaRavia. Jaren Jackson Jr. is supposed to be out for, when the news came out, it was 4 to 6 months, but now it's looking like it's going to be closer to like 4 or 5. So Coach Jenkins actually said today that he should be doing some 5-on-5 stuff in the next couple of weeks. So that's exciting. So Marcus, in the midst of everything in the Western Conference, I think the theme in the Western Conference is just, there's just fresh. It's just all fresh because you have the returns of guys like all-star, superstar guys like Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Jamal Murray, Zion Williamson. But you also have these, and also, too, Anthony Davis as well. You have teams that made some big moves this offseason with the Rudy Gobert acquisition. And then you also had Christian Wood going to the Dallas Mavericks. There's just a whole lot of stuff that happened. And I think in the midst of that, everybody kind of dings the Grizzlies for their lack of activity. So, Mark, where would you just kind of, when you're assessing these teams, where do you value continuity and internal improvement in the midst of all this moves and all these healthy players returning? Because it's not like this is an old team just running it back. Like, this is last year, they were the second youngest team in the league, and they're just running it back. So where do you kind of value those two things in relation to all the flurries that we get throughout the offseason?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's part of where I struggle a little bit with doing offseason stuff. It's because I feel like often people put out things that are binary. That's not to, you know, shit on them for that. Like, I just personally think like it's a lot less concrete than it tends to get made out to be. Like, I think, yeah, if you're looking directly at this and saying, well, Jaren's going to miss the first couple months and he was huge to everything that they did defensively, and just in general, and saying like just going from there, like, yeah, and then they're losing Melton too, who was a top eight rotation player last year. You can be like, well, they're going to take a step back. And but that's without accounting for like, okay, well, Zaire Williams probably sees some real improvement this year just based on what we've seen in preseason and what he looked like in summer league, just the flashes that we saw last year and what we can expect moving into this year. I think, like, again, like, you don't want to take too much for preseason, but like Santi Aldama's looked really good.
Santi seasoning, that's right.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting is, like, I feel I don't quite know how things are going to work in terms of quote-unquote replacing what D'Anthony Melton was for the team, but I think it's more so like you're just getting a lot more versatile front court players, like adding David Roddy, like you mentioned, like he can kind of play everywhere. Like, granted, it's still going to be a very young team. Like, there's a ton of rookies on this team. And not that all of them are going to play, but I just think that there's a lot you can look at and be pretty interested in how it's going to function. I'm probably less high on, not that I dislike Desmond, but I just think that in terms of asking Desmond Bane to take another sizable leap on top of what he's already done, like, I feel like that's asking for a lot personally. But even like looking at Ja, like, I think we saw a lot that I was excited about in the preseason that I watched with Ja really working on the floater. Like, he's had it in the bag, but I think like he has it going from looking like something that defenses are pretty willing to give him because they don't want him attacking the rim, to now, like, with how much he's really working on it. If that hits, like, instead of being like a 40 to 42% shot, if he's shooting like 45, 46% on floaters, and is really just working in more pacing and tempo, like, that does a ton for the offense. So I think that there's a lot of ways that you can look at this and be like, there's going to be improvement on the team. It's just going to depend on how much and how everything plays out with other teams as well, as far as injuries go.
Absolutely. Because right now everyone's 0-0. Everyone's, for the most part, they're healthy. So there's still so much other factors to take into account. No, it's, you know, you bring up the jaw element in this and like the improvements that he can make, because, you know, you look at a guy who took this superstardom leap and you're like, well, how could he get better? And you bring up the floater. Everyone's going to talk about the 3-point shot. But I think the real thing that stuck out is in preseason was his defense. You know, with losing Melton and losing Anderson, you lost a lot of defensive event creation. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like Ja kind of like took that upon himself. I want to say he averaged 2.6 stocks per game. And just it seemed like whenever he did create an event on defense, it always just turned into a bucket on the offensive end. Whether it's him taking it himself or him leaking out in transition, having somebody outlet to him. That was probably the thing that, to me, that kind of stuck out there the most. But also, too, and the biggest factor in this internal improvement and making up for the losses of Melton and Anderson is Zaire Williams. And, Mark, I know you're high on him. I see, like, your tweets, and I saw him in your big Twitter thread of things you're excited for this season. So what's the thing with Zaire Williams you're going to be looking for in this season? Because, you know, he gets unfairly pegged to have this Desmond Bane leap. When Desmond Bane took a incredibly difficult leap, he kind of took two leaps in one season. Mm-hmm. So kind of gauging expectations for Zaire Williams when you're accounting for the losses of Melton and Anderson, where do you think Williams can add value to kind of offset those losses in a sense?
Yeah, I think the idea, and I think some, well, again, like based on what we're seeing in preseason and how they worked him in summer league and just what feels like the next logical step is like just having him based on what his shooting could be. Because I think the next step is him really improving his efficiency just as a shooter in general. Like having some secondary creation come out of that, working like you saw them really try and work, like they're running drag screens for him in early offense when he brings the ball up. Like, I think that there's room to add in like really like small things like that that don't necessarily mean that you have to run the offense through him, but it gives him opportunities to create shots because he does have like he has some really interesting passing ability. He has some ball handling chops. We know what he can do as a mid-range scorer. I think it's a lot of just ironing out the consistency. So I think it's a lot of like doing the same of what they did last year, but just steadily incorporating a little bit of extra stuff. Because like I something I actually want to write about, because like last year I felt like the best way to put it is he was kind of like king of the corners. Like everything, yep. Like I feel like one of the things you could rely on every single Grizz game was to see Zaire Williams sprinting to the corner. Like every freaking game, every time that there's an opportunity to get down court, he's doing it. Everything he did was operating out of the corners. Like they really didn't do a ton of stuff with him handling the ball last year. It was all about giving him a really consistent role, asking him to do small things and just get good at it. And I felt like we saw a lot of that. And that's without even like saying the defense. Like I thought obviously the defense wasn't perfect last year, but as far as what we saw out of the rookies defensively, like he's really encouraging. Like I think his navigation and his size is really good. He doesn't fall asleep off the ball all the time. He does some stuff blowing up things on the weak side. So I think that there's just room for him to kind of improve in all facets as he gets more playing time, which maybe that doesn't mean a massive leap. Like I think he probably ends up scoring like 12 points per game this year or something like that. Like it could be higher, it could be lower, but I think a lot more of it's just efficiency and ironing out things.
For sure. You know, the efficiency is one thing that stands out because, you know, for one, I mean, he does have a really strong mechanics, but I mean, also last year he only shot 31% from three. And that was just because, you know, that first part of the season before he got hurt, he was kind of just putrid from three in that regard. I think he's like sub 20%, but, you know, he kind of came along as a shooter. And I want to say towards the tail end of the season, he was shooting. Yeah. He had this breakout game at Madison Square Garden, averaged about like 21, or he scored 21 points. And from then on, so I think it was like 29 games from that game on to the end of the season, he shot about 39% from three, which if you're adding that kind of guy next to John Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr., that's the kind of floor spacer you need. And one thing you brought up too that's really interesting is the corners, because it wasn't just like, oh, he's just going to shoot a ton of corner threes. And also, too, he wasn't even that great at corner threes. He was in the 27th percentile in corner three percentage. But he also used the corners to crash a lot and find cutting angles. He shot like 82% from the rim because he just made himself a lob threat. You know, a lot of teams, they get caught snoozing on the weak side because they're just tantalized with, what is John Morant going to do? We got to make sure he doesn't get to the rim. And that has opened up ways for Zaire Williams to just cut from the backside and catch a lob there. But also, too, with expanding him and his responsibilities to being more of a secondary playmaker, like you mentioned, it also now allows Taylor Jenkins to ease one of the rookies in, or ease Santi Aldama into being that corner role, whether it's Aldama or if it's Laravia or if it's Roddy. They can kind of follow that similar path. I don't know if it's going to be to the same magnitude as we saw with Zaire Williams last year, but I do think that there's a good framework to kind of just maintain this solid bench chemistry, even though they lost two guys.
Yeah, no, this is a good point. And I think what's interesting too is like you can see, especially with Santi, like I think you can, like he's a really, like he's not a class A level playmaker from like the high and low post, but he's a really good passer for his size and position. Then, and I think that adds a lot more stuff that you're not getting with Jaren. Like maybe some stuff that you're getting with Kyle, but he's not the level ball handler that I think Kyle is. But just again, like I think you add more looks that you maybe didn't have last year, and you can get interesting with, like, you know, if Steven's not on the floor, I think that you can do some of the same things with Santi, like running post splits or having him operate out of the high post and just give looks. Like he's a good cutter. I think the shot was there for him in preseason. Again, it's just like kind of figuring out more ways to incorporate guys. And even then, like talking about Jake Laravia, like Laravia is a really interesting driver and just kind of off ball wing forward who can do some fun things at the four spot. So it's like, again, just a lot of, I think that there are I want to say there's more offensive versatility while maybe losing a little bit of defensive versatility this year. Not necessarily that I think they're going to be a bad defensive team, but I think, you know, considering what Belton is when he's at his best, how good Jaren is, like obviously he'll be back, but you know, just where it's at right now.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4-3-2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Yeah, and let's talk about the Jaren element with this and how it ties in with guys like Aldama and ties into Jake LaRavia, David Roddy. Is, you know, they're losing a lot with Jaren Jackson Jr., and it kind of has determined people's expectations of like, oh, they're going to take a step back. Because they don't know how long Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be out, especially when they're replacing them with guys like Santi Aldama, Jake LaRavia, David Roddy, guys that are pretty unproven. Like, I would throw Brandon Clark in there, but he's going to stay in that bench role. That's where he thrives. Having him and Adams is kind of clunky. So they're going to go with more of a wing forward rather than a forward big. But how does Jaren Jackson Jr.'s absence, I guess, kind of pencil this team in for you? Like, what's the difference between them with Jaren Jackson Jr. back by Thanksgiving and with him back by Christmas? And also too, like, how do you see them making up for the Jackson loss in the aggregate?
Good question. I think it's tough because I don't really think you can make up for what Jaren does defensively. Like, he ended up making all defense last year, right? I know I voted him for all defense.
That's right.
But like, yeah, like I think for me, it's just there's nobody on the roster who can do what he does. So I think that makes it tough. As far as what they can do, I think you maybe do some more stuff, especially if, like, you know, you're not going to do the same stuff with Santi, but like maybe you have more aggressive ball screen coverages, or you're just doing, like, I think we saw a lot of switching in preseason too, just in general. Like, I think there's going to be a lot more of trying to protect the rim by just preventing the ball from getting there. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, TBD on how that looks. I think that they have the personnel to make that interesting and work. But then offensively, like, I think what makes it interesting is, like, offensively, again, like, I think that you can just do a lot more that, like, obviously when Jaren's at his best, I think that you miss that. And losing his shooting is going to be really tough, because I think that you have guys who can hit shots in the front court. A lot's going to depend on how does Zaire take that step as a three-point shooter, and, you know, taking stuff off movement too, because there just aren't a lot of movement shooters on this team, which I think can be a little bit of a hindrance to the offense at times. But like, I mean, you're going to see a lot more Brandon Clark, I would imagine. Like, that's where mm-hmm. I go. Also, I love the deal for him. I think some people probably got a little bit too excited about it. Like, I still think, like, I really want to see more happen with his game. Like, he's a very good player. He's a good defender. He does enough offensively to really hang and be effective. But I think, you know, if he's going to become like a starting caliber player, I think it's by expanding his game even more. But yeah, like, I mean, to fully answer the question, like, I think it's kind of, I don't want to say wait and see mode for me, but it's more, I really want to see what this team looks like over the first couple of weeks without Jaren, just because I'm so used to seeing what they look like with him, and how essential he is for everything that they've done. I don't think that this team is going to nosedive or anything. Like, I think that there's probably been a little bit too much of the, oh, they're going to fall off, while also noting that I do think they're going to, I don't think that I expect them to be, you know, hanging around the one seed again this year, just given what what everything's looking like health wise for everyone. But yeah, I mean, it's, I feel like it's just kind of touch and go.
Yeah. And also too, one thing I've been meaning to bring up is it's really, I guess, kind of easy to pinpoint a 56 win team to be the team that falls off, because
yeah,
like you can't just expect,
hard to keep up with that.
You can't expect to be like, oh, now it's 60. Cause like, what happens when you get to 60? Are you just going to be like, oh, it's disappointing if they win 60 games, or if they win 55 games, it's disappointing. Like, there's different measures of success. And that's one thing I want to ask you is, without necessarily accounting for like wins and losses or anything, what is, in your view, what is the measure of success and progression this season for the Memphis Grizzlies?
Yeah, I think to me, success for this team, or at least measuring it, is like, okay, well, what steps is Ja taking? Because I think that's the biggest one. You know, is, I mean, he's the most important player on the team. Well, I guess, I mean, you can make the Jaren case, but I think like for me with Ja, like considering how much he drives for the offense, like getting as much out of him as possible, I think is huge for him continuing to develop into an actual MVP level talent. You know, like you mentioned with the defense, like even his defense just coming along a little bit would be huge, because for large swaths of last year, I thought he was just about the worst guard defender in the NBA. Like, his point of attack defense is really rough. He can fall asleep off the ball all the time. And the Grizzlies defense succeeded in spite of that. So I think you look at like, okay, well, if he's just getting to like neutral levels, how good that defense could be. And, but then like looking more at overall, I think to me, it's not even just job, but it's okay, how is everyone else on this team progressing in terms of making this half court offense more functional? Because I think, especially against the Warriors, you saw real issues with what the spacing could be on the team. And less so just spacing in general, but I think there was a lot of comfort to pinpoint guys who the Warriors really weren't afraid of beating them. So I think continuing to develop out guys who can do that, like, and again, that's why Zaire's growth this year is going to be really big. I think, again, just getting, what does David Roddy bring to the table? Because he's going to get reps. Same thing with Jake LaRavia. Like, anybody who has opportunities to really function as a secondary player, I think they're going to get opportunities too. So I'm really interested to see what that looks like, because to me, it's just with this team now, like, not that I don't know if I'm ready to call them a contender this year. I think like they were in like that borderline group last year. But when you're looking to see what steps they're taking for the playoffs, like, yeah, I think continuing to develop as a half court offense can be really big for them.
Yeah, I've definitely written on that. And I've also just from the Grizzlies moves this past off season, you know, Kyle Anderson, not a good half court player. How do they replace him? They go draft guys that can score in a variety of ways in the half court. Like, I looked at David Roddy's synergy page, and just about every single metric of scoring efficiency was an A or A plus grade. It was really kind of just baffling. But no, I think that's a thing to watch. And I think you kind of brought me to the idea of, you know, the Warriors decided, okay, this guy's not going to beat us, and these guys can beat us. You know, I think they decided early in that series that they weren't going to let Desmond Bane and Brandon Clark beat them like they let Minnesota. They let Dylan Brooks beat them. And I think a big thing this season for a measure of success is, I think Dylan Brooks is a key player in that, because I want to see how he's willing to kind of tone on his shot selection, because it gets lost in this, but he's a very impactful player for the Memphis Grizzlies. I think he's led the team in on-off rating for the past two seasons. This past season, even though in a very small sample size because of injuries to both him and Ja, they only shared less than 300 possessions together, but they outscored opponents by 21.4 points per 100 possessions. That's really good. And when you have a really strong point of attack defender with an elite rim protector, you're going to have a top 10 defense most of the time. You would have to be, I guess, a house of cards defensively for you not to be a top 10 defense with those two kind of pieces out there. So I think that's going to be a very interesting barometer there. But yeah, I mean, I guess also too, the growth of Zaire Williams is also going to be pretty important in, I guess, measuring success, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's a good point on Dylan too. I think he gets overlooked too much, in my opinion. Like, obviously the lows for him can be very low.
That Warriors game four, I think everybody was ready to just trade him as he got off the plane.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's so hard is like, okay, well, they don't get to Warriors game four without him. Like,
yeah,
like you mentioned, the defense is really, really good from him. As much as it can be frustrating to watch him, like, I think he just about fouled out in the first half of the first preseason game.
Yeah.
I was like, that's very on brand for Dylan Brooks. But like, that's also, he brings, as much as people like get frustrated with that stuff, like, it's important. Like, that's real stuff. Like, I don't know how else to, like, he just brings some intangible in that. I think like sometimes people can go overboard in expressing how important that is, but it is still important. Like, that's very much something that the team missed at times last year. Like, there was a really rough stretch for their defense when Dylan went out. Mm-hmm. And just not having him there to stop the ball is a huge part in that. You know, looking overall too at what he brings offensively, again, like, I know people can complain about his shot selection, and it can be frustrating at times. He's a very shitty passer, if we're being honest.
They're very bad.
But
awful.
Also, like, with what this offense was last year, they needed somebody who could take shots in the half court. There were times, especially in that Warriors series, where, like, he was their best option in the half court. Because Ja,
especially without Ja, yeah.
Yeah, like, and, like, when Ja was healthy, like, his offensive game is good. But, like, as we saw with the Warriors, like, they were content to load up on him, wait for him in the paint, and try and make him score out of the mid-range from three, and just wasn't there for him. Like, that's right. Compared to what Dylan can bring, it's granted, neither are effective modes of offense for the most part, but, like, when it's getting to the playoffs and like that, it was important. So I'm there with you. Like, having him back and hopefully healthy this season is going to be really important.
Yeah, I will say, too, he did admit to the media that he is going to use his fouls. He will use his five fouls. I'm like, you know what? Can't knock him. Can't knock him for that mentality. But I know on the flip side of things, though, I do want to ask you, you know, everybody's pegging this regression. And, like, how would you measure a regression aside from wins and losses? Because obviously you'll have stuff where it's like, oh, if they have bad injury health, any team in the Western Conference, except for maybe the Warriors, if they run into bad injury luck, they're in the play-in. And that could happen for anyone. But, you know, aside from wins and losses, aside from health, what would you kind of measure as a possible regression for the Memphis Grizzlies?
Oh, that's a good question. What would I consider a regression for this?
If you want me to give you an idea, I can go ahead and spout my answer first.
Yeah, what is your answer?
Yeah, I think it would probably be one of the rookies just not being ready to play rotation minutes throughout any course of the regular season. I think the Memphis Grizzlies have fostered a very strong player development environment. I mean, the fact that Zaire Williams, who was probably one of the rawest prospects of anybody drafted in the lottery last year, was playing big minutes in the second round of the playoffs is a testament to the player development there. Desmond Bane's leap. The fact that they really haven't had, you know, just one of those seasons that's just awful. You know, they haven't had one of those like 60 loss seasons where kind of everybody's rooting for losses at a certain point to boost their lottery odds. They've been relatively competitive ever since John Morant arrived in Memphis. And I think, and that's because of how ready these rookies have been, whether that's Morant and Clark or Bane and Tillman or Zaire Williams. I think if we don't really see much polish or anything from Laravia or Roddy, it'd be kind of a hit just because his team's so reliant on depth. And when you draft that many rookies and they're not that ready, they're not that NBA ready, it kind of just kills that strength in numbers mentality, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Like, I would agree with that. I think if both of Roddy and Laravia struggle to really have an impact on the team, I think that would be kind of a loss, especially considering, like, I'm trying to remember. I apologize. I should know this off the top of my head, but did they trade down to draft Laravia?
So what happened is they had 19 and 29. No, yeah. 22 and 29, traded those up to get Laravia.
Okay.
Spots. And then traded back in for Roddy.
Okay. Well, yeah, especially when you're making a trade up, like, and considering that Laravia is a little bit of an older prospect, I don't want to say that like makes or breaks who he is just by what year one is. But I think if you're willing to make that move as the team, especially considering like when you're factoring in that they really didn't make any other giant offseason moves, you're kind of banking on him or Roddy to be your rotation player this year, especially mm-hmm. with, you know, considering Jaren being out early. I think like another thing too, like that I want to see, and granted, like he was kind of a later pick, but what is Xavier Tillman's role this year? Cause I think that he really wafted in and out last year after having a pretty good rookie season. Granted, part of that was with Steven Adams coming in, but still, like I think that there's so many guys on this roster. Sometimes I'm still looking to see like, okay, what is that one breakthrough that happens that kind of changes the trajectory a little bit? And is that a trade? Is that somebody who really pops again? Like, I don't know, but I'm probably not as, I think some people were like a little bit too harsh on them for not making moves. Like, again, like you mentioned, they were second youngest team in the league last year and won 56 games. Like, I don't think that they necessarily had to do anything crazy, but they are kind of at the point too with, when you win like that and are competitive in the playoffs, like you kind of have to still make moves and see what happens. So I feel like I'm interested just to see how they handle that and traverse that this season.
Yeah. Also, I think people in kind of the midst of that, they also forget that the NBA offseason was literally on pause for about 6 weeks because of Kevin Durant and Donovan Mitchell stuff. So like,
yeah,
nothing really happened because of that. And you know, you bring up those good points too, but also too, like with all these extensions that have been going on for these veteran players, it kind of dries out the free agency market a little bit. Like I think the only free agent that I was like, ah, man, I kind of wish they would have gotten them was Dante DiVincenzo, who still is at his best a combo guard off the bench. Like yeah. It's not like they were getting anybody that truly moved the needle for them in that sense. But yeah, I agree on that. And you know, let's close here with the question of the day. Thank you for the roughly 200 people that have voted on this question. I asked, where will the Grizzlies ultimately stand in the Western Conference this season? Roughly 32% of y'all said top three, 59.5% said 4-6, 8.2% said 7 or 8, so in the play-in, and then 0.5% said low play-in at 9 and 10. Mark, what was your answer here, man?
I had 4-6.
Mm-hmm. I just think that's where I was at.
Yeah. I think, there's still a chance that they could be a top three team. But again, just with how much time Jaren's probably going to miss, I would not have them there. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they make it there. I would be surprised if they fall to 7-9. That would be like, there's definitely a sizable injury that happens there to make them fall to 7-9, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Right. I had 4-6. I can see them being third. I think. For one, this just kind of feels like the same vibe that we got from the Warriors from going into the last season. I'm seeing that same vibe with the Clippers. I think they're just absolutely loaded with depth. I think the Warriors, they can kind of have Steph and Klay and Draymond not be full throttle on the gas and rely on the development of a lot of high upside prospects. Denver's really good. You have teams like Minnesota, Phoenix, New Orleans. There's just a lot of teams, but I mean, I still think at the end of the day, Memphis is going to be in that 4-6 range. I think they should be a top six team in the West, but it is going to be absolutely hellacious. That conference is going to be so much damn fun. I'm excited to see how it all shakes out. I think for the first, probably until the trade deadline, probably teams are just going to beat up on each other, and then you'll just have those teams that surrender for Wembanyama or Scoot Henderson, and then those losses or those wins are going to start kind of piling up because you all have teams that are just pulling out G League rosters at that point.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very interesting to see this year, to say nonetheless. Like I part of me like really hopes that we don't see a ton of insane tanking, but I think there are going to be a couple teams that like really go for it this year.
I'm ready honestly for just the team that's like, they come into the season ready to compete for the play-in, and then they just pivot by New Year's and be like, well, never mind. We don't have it. Let's just go all in on this insane lottery. All right. So, Mark, I told you before we recorded, I was going to ask you food question. So, I think last time we had you on, Joe and I, we talked about barbecue. But another thing that's really kind of emerged in Memphis food scene is chicken wings. So, Where are you on wings? Are you more flats, drums? Do you have any hot takes on wings or no?
So, my hot take is I like boneless best. That always goes over well when I say that. But I worked at a wing place for a while. So I was a bartender at a wing place, and I actually kind of hated it because as awesome as wings are, Like, we always ran out. I think we always ran out of flats, and people because when I worked at the bar, So I had to handle like all the to go orders. So like every time you had to tell people that you're out of flats, it's always like, well, how are you out of flats? And you'll be like halfway through doing an order, and then somebody like ends up canceling everything, or it's just it's frustrating shit. So like I enjoy wings. But I tend to just stick with my boneless because they're less messy. I can eat them with a fork. So
I will say you kind of get a pass there for your take on wings, because I would bet working at a food restaurant for so long, you just kind of get burnt out on any kind of food that they serve. But also, yeah. I must say, boneless wings are chicken tenders. I hope you know that.
That's fine with me. Like, I don't mind.
Chicken tenders are good. They're good.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Not as scorched syrup as I expected that to be. It's not like your maple syrup take I saw the other day. So
I have thoughts on maple syrup. We can those for later.
Oh yeah. But Mark, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and just plug in anything that you got going on, anything you got planned for the upcoming season.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on. It's been awesome to see what you guys are doing. It's still weird seeing Joe not be affiliated with GBB anymore, but
I know
you guys are still crushing it. So I'm excited to, continue to chat up as the year goes on. You can find me on Twitter at @MG_Schindler. That's where I'm most active. If you enjoy my work and what I do, I have a Patreon. I'm still not technically a full-time worker in basketball. And that helps me be full-time and as active as I am. So any support or anything is greatly appreciated.
Awesome. Yeah. And also, if anyone listening to this has hiring power for full-time basketball jobs, hashtag hire Mark. He has a lot of great stuff. He's, like I said, he's very versatile. You can cover the NBA, cover the WNBA, go into the draft. He can cover guys like Santi Aldama just as well as you can cover guys like John Morant. So make sure y'all are following Mark and all the great work that he's doing. And make sure you follow me on Twitter @Paka_Flocka. Make sure you follow us on Twitter @SBNGrizzlies. Check out our work over at grizzlybearblues.com as we are ramping up for year 4 of Grizz Next Gen. And make sure you are liking, subscribing, downloading the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network so you don't miss a single episode of our 5 shows. And you can do that wherever you get your podcast. And with that, we'll see you next week.